Welcome back to InPod, your home for all things InFlow. I'm Nick Sweeney. I'm your host. Every single week, it seems like, every single day, it seems like I have a conversation with someone regarding servers. In particular, we're talking about, you know, we're setting up a new PDM environment and we want new archive servers, new database servers. We're upgrading our environment. We need to move on to a brand new server. We've got people that are in a remote office and they need better access. So they need their own server to replicate this data. What can we do? That conversation comes up quite literally all the time. I had the conversation earlier today even, and I'm recording this in the morning. So that tells you how quickly I have these conversations every single day. It happens all the time. And there's a lot of things that you can think about with regards to your archive server and your database server. Remember, there are multiple servers with SOLIDWORKS PDM. Multiple things we have to consider. So I figured what better thing to talk about on the podcast than something that comes up so often. So this week, what I did is I decided to bring in Ryan Daly, the professor. I brought him in once again to talk with me a little bit about what we've done on the pre-sales side to help understand this stuff, as well as some of the things that he's learned throughout his years of doing pre-sales work and working with different customers on implementations. He knows a lot more about this stuff than I do. So without anything further, I'm going to jump into my interview with Ryan Daly to talk with you guys about servers. This week, I wanted to bring back one of the common guests, the professor. I brought Ryan Daly back, and he's going to talk with me a little bit about hardware, specifically for your PDM environment, the different kinds of servers, and what kinds of things you can expect. So, Ryan, Mr. Professor, welcome back to InPod.
Thanks, Nick. Thanks for having me back on.
Of course. And you said yourself that the professor is an old nickname of yours, so I guess we're going to bring that back. So, that should be fun.
I appreciate that. Brings back some fond memories.
So you've been doing PDM for quite a while. And one of the things that we've got on the pre-sales team, I know that we like to share this with our customers as we're talking with them, is specifically hardware recommendations, because everybody wants to know. This comes up every third call, probably. We're getting a new server. What should we have? What's important? What are the server requirements? What do we need to do? And I thought it made a lot of sense to really dig into that a little bit on the podcast today. Talk about, first off, hardware for a server, the fact that there are two kinds of servers with PDM, and what you can kind of expect, what you should look for. How is this environment set up? Is it virtual? Is it physical? How is this all going to work out? And I think that a really good place to start is just talking about the fact that we have not one, but two databases inside of SOLIDWORKS PDM. Ryan, can you kind of walk us through really what is the archive server at a high level and then kind of what is the database server?
Yeah, sure. No problem. So with SOLIDWORKS PDM, you know, regardless of what version you're using, they have some primary components and there's a few of them. Just like with regular SOLIDWORKS, there's, of course, the license server. So we have that in the mix as well. But the two new pieces that you'll be getting with SOLIDWORKS PDM is what they call the SOLIDWORKS PDM archive and the SOLIDWORKS PDM database. So the archive is kind of like the name implies, it's where all the files live. So when you're using PDM, when you're adding files, checking them in, checking them out, the actual file themselves comes from this place called the archive. So the archive has a application that talks with the entire PDM system to keep everything in sync. So whenever you're getting a version on your computer, if you're a client, that's coming from the archive. So you can kind of think of it as a file store that can only be accessed through PDM.
So as far as connecting to these servers, like we have to make sure that we can connect up to the archive server so that we can grab those files, because the archive is just the physical files are there. Now, it's not like, and I get this question quite a bit, people ask, well, if it's on the archive, if it's actually just a folder, does that mean I can just go through and find every single file? Yeah, but it's encoded. And if you have 6 hours to spare, sure, you can go try to find your file and decode it. But your files are just there and you can access in all of the versions, all of the revisions. Everything is kept there. That's just the physical files themselves. Mm-hmm. So between the two servers, your archive is, from just a dry space perspective, significantly larger than what the database is, because the database is much, much smaller, at least from a drive perspective, because it's just that information that we have behind the scenes that basically it's all of your references, it's all of the metadata that's associated with your files themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like to think of the database aspect of PDM as the brains of PDM. It's where all the information lives about those files. It's the permissions. It's all those things that really helps make PDM tick. So the database inside of it, it knows where all these files are in the archive. Kind of like you mentioned, like you could look inside the archive and you can see there's all these funny named folders and file names that don't make a lot of sense. That's because it's all coded, so the database can find these files very quickly. So it's meant to be read by a machine. It's not, you know, man readable, as we'd like to say, like your Windows folder structure would be, where you could go find part one, right? Where if you were to look in the archive, again, it's a jumble of different file names that don't make a lot of sense, but it makes absolute sense to that database. So, and while you're exactly right, the database itself is very, very small compared to, in as far as like gigabytes go, compared to the actual archive themselves. But we do have these two distinctly different things that really do need to be kept in sync in order for the system to work properly. So, yes, there are going to be different requirements for each of these two things, where essentially the archive is going to be very heavy on disk space, where the database is really not so much worried about disk space, but about speed, about how fast we get that information moving back and forth.
And part of that whole conversation, when we're looking at how can we be most efficient with these servers, is where are they physically? So some people, there has been a massive move, especially with the last 12 months and the world as it has been. People are wanting to move into cloud environments, or people are wanting to get away from on-premise. So the question's coming up quite a bit. Can these servers be virtual? Can we store this on like Azure or AWS or whatever we have available to us right now? The question then becomes, is this okay? Can I put my PDM environment up there? And you know what I tell people is, yeah, absolutely. If you can install your Windows Server 2019, if you can have your SQL databases, because that's your database server, it's SQL. If you can have all of that and you meet your general requirements, can it work? Sure. There are certain supported environments that are like, yeah, use these if you have a choice. Having a virtual environment, I don't see any problem with it. Personally, I think it's a great idea to have virtual servers because backups are much easier to do and accessing it's pretty consistent.
Yeah, absolutely. Like we see, I would say a vast majority of our customers are definitely moving in to the virtual machine, right? They'll have a very powerful computer either in their building, in a data center, or on the cloud that's virtual. And that just makes it really easy to, you know, do things like add drive space, add more RAM, you know, add these different resources to the servers almost on the fly as needed. And, you know, it always kind of adds up over time where you're needing more RAM or more disk drive space. It very rarely goes down. But by making these virtual, it makes it very, very easy. And kind of like you said, if the Windows environment is supported, because all these things that are parts of PDM are all Windows-based, you know, it's not Linux, it's not something else. It all is installed on Windows machines. So those Windows machines could be virtual, they could be physical, they could be in your building, could be in somebody else's building, could be in the cloud as the ephemeral cloud, if you will, and it's essentially just somebody else's data center, but it can live in any of these different places. So really what it comes down to is, yes, technically we could put these things almost anywhere, and it really just comes down to what's actually supported by SOLIDWORKS to make sure that, you know, if there is a problem, for whatever reason, we can get a resolution, as opposed to, you know, an unsupported environment where it's going to be a little bit tougher.
And I do want to say, when we're talking about a supported environment, we're not saying like, if you call us and you don't have a supported environment, that we're just going to hang up the phone on support. That's never the goal. But if it ends up being something that it's because of the environment you're on that there's a problem here, it's something that SOLIDWORKS isn't going to put on their priority list of things to fix. You know, if you're having issues, hey, I can't grab my file, there's some issue with it, and it has nothing to do with your environment, yeah, we'll try to help you as much as we can. But for those supported environments, I do have it up in front of me. You did mention, Ryan, that like Macintosh is not supported as far as PDM goes. I know a lot of people want to use it. Unless you're using a web environment, you can't really access the vault because it uses Windows Explorer, so it doesn't really work out. If you are on Mac, though, you can use Parallels Desktop for the Mac because that'll let you kind of run Windows. But you can also use VMware. There's two options for VMware. You can use Microsoft Hyper-V as well as Citrix. I think it's Zen Server. You can use those different environments. Those are different places that if you want a virtual environment and you want to make sure that we're fully supported so that if something potentially could go wrong, that SOLIDWORKS is there to back us up, there to help us. Those would be your options. And that's all on the system requirements page for SOLIDWORKS. So I'll make sure I put that in like the description of the podcast so that everyone can access it. But if you want a virtual environment, that's what you should do.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, if you don't see your environment listed, if you're on the website, you know, it's always a good idea. You could always call in to support or send an email because that site occasionally is not always up to date. So if you have something that's brand new or maybe something that's a little bit older, you know, reach out and we can confirm that it'll work for you. So if you don't see, you know, your system there, just let us know. We could even see if we could find out if it's on the roadmap.
And there are those general requirements that we have to make sure that we follow along with to set up our server. You know, we've kind of talked about it. We have to use a Windows environment. That's everything runs on Windows. At this point, if you're running SOLIDWORKS 2020 or anything newer, you've got to be at least on Windows Server 2016. SQL as well is another big thing that you need, depending on if you're on PDM Standard or PDM Professional. That varies quite a bit as far as which version of SQL you need. But you really want to be on a newer version of SQL. Ryan, correct me if I'm wrong, I think we're up to like SQL 2019 even is supported. So if you want to be super new, you can be on Windows Server 2019, SQL Server 2019. Have fun with it. I recommend going as current as you can because it kind of future-proofs it. That's how I like to say it, because then you know that I'm not going to go obsolete in the next 3 years. I shouldn't go obsolete in the next 3 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so 3 years is a good number. Most people that we talk about, they want to plan out 3 to 5 years in the future to make sure that they'll be supported. They don't have to go through these things again of getting speccing new hardware or updating their environment. So it's always good to kind of be on whatever the latest supported version is. Now, one thing I will say is that SOLIDWORKS does kind of follow Microsoft's lead. So when Microsoft retires a version under support, generally SOLIDWORKS is going to follow suit. Occasionally, SOLIDWORKS will end support a little bit earlier, but that's usually because the newest version of software needs to take advantage of something in the newer version. And we see that a lot with SQL. So while we do see a lot of backwards compatibility, if you will, for SQL, SOLIDWORKS is always encouraging that we stay on the latest because if you've looked at the what's new whenever a new version of SOLIDWORKS and PDM comes out, they always say, was it performance enhancements? Most of those performance enhancements actually come from the newer versions of the foundation software like SQL. Mm-hmm. So if you're on a newer version of SQL, chances are you will see better performance than you would on an older version. Now, of course, everyone's mileage will vary, but that's just a really good rule to follow. And a lot of things we'll be discussing here today is kind of like these general recommendations. There's lots of different ways you can roll out hardware. But these are kind of things that we look for when we're talking to folks who are looking for this information.
And Wilkie Favre and I kind of hit on that a few weeks ago, just talking about what's new, what are the performance enhancements and PDM, I think it was like 25% faster adding files, something like that. A lot of that is SQL. So the newer version of SQL you're on, the more likely you're going to see those enhancements. Yeah, you might see a little bit with like, if you're still on 2014 Service Path 3 in the worst case scenario, if you're still there, you might see a little bit, but you probably won't see the full breadth of enhancement that you get, the full speed of what's going to be happening unless you have that new environment. Which, if you're not on a new environment, let's say you're actually upgrading your PDM, and let's say maybe you're on PDM 2019. 2019 still supported Windows Server 2012 R2, but let's say, okay, well, we need to move up. We need to get on PDM 2020, PDM 2021. What can we do? You know, can we upgrade our server as is? Can we put it on a new server? What kind of options do we have there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is a very hot topic right now, because a lot of people are running into this. Now, since, you know, most hardware gets replaced every 3 to 5 years, you know, sometimes longer, of course, we want to be prepared for what it means to go from the old stuff to the new stuff. So there are some folks who like to do what's called an upgrade in place. Essentially, they're going to use their old hardware and they're going to up the operating system or the OS to a newer version. Now, that's pretty rare. Most ID departments that we've worked with, usually if there's a need to update the OS, they're also just going to plan to update the hardware at the same time. Almost everybody does it that way. It's a fairly standard practice. So, because when you upgrade your hardware, you're going to be getting all new software along with it. And it's just, it's a good time to kind of take on that challenge of updating everything at the same time. So we also find that a lot of folks can't upgrade in place, where for whatever reason, their hardware won't support the newer version of Windows or whatnot. Or in some cases, you go to try to upgrade in place and there's simply a limitation to how you set up the server the first time. And it says, well, we're going to have to wipe the whole thing anyway, so you might as well just start over. Those kinds of things. So we find most people don't do that upgrade in place. If you do, that's fine. We do recommend kind of reinstalling some of the software as well because of all the changes that a new OS brings. But what most people do is they will purchase new hardware, set it up fresh, or set up a fresh VM, you know, if you're on a virtual machine, kind of the same concept. And they will essentially do a fresh install to new hardware, whether it's virtual or physical. And we call that a server move. We're essentially moving the PDM components from one machine to the other. So, and we have to be kind of careful with how we describe these things. So like when we say server move, it's literally moving those components from one machine to the other. And Nick, I'm going to pause here. I'm thinking maybe we should back up. I'm getting too redundant and let you ask the question. So
yeah, so
I'm going to okay.
So one of the big things about server moves, and I don't think I'm going to cut that. I'll just let it go. It'll be fun. So okay. One of the things about a server move is I'll hear people always come up and say, so we're going to have to migrate our data. And I'm always really careful about the word migrate our data, because people think of a migration and they think, oh, we had to bring in all of our files into PDM and that took X amount of hours and it's going to be the same thing for moving our servers. Generally, that's not the case. Because for a server move, it's moving the files from your PDM already exists. We're just going to move them to a new place. And that's all it is. So, you know, is it going to be as fast as leaving your server in place? Probably not. But this is not a process that takes days or weeks to do. It's generally something we can do it fairly quickly because it's a robocopy. We connect the two computers to each other and go from A to B. And then we just reconnect it. It's a pretty simple process overall. Ryan, I do want to ask you now, because it's not a terribly hard process to do the server move, to move everything to a new server. We do have customers that have tried to do it themselves and have been very successful. But there are things that we have to make sure that we think about as we do this. Beyond just moving our files, like we have to make sure that we're reconnecting our clients and we have to move database, and a lot of other stuff has to happen besides just physically installing everything and moving the files.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so once you get your new environment set up with your new fancy specs, you know, ready to last you for a few years, we go into this move like you just talked about. So you can think of it a lot like a backup or restore operation, where essentially we're moving those archives. A lot of times we'll use like, just built-in tools like Robocopy to move all those over. And, you know, that's going to be your time suck right there is, you know, however long it takes to move them from A to B. Mm-hmm. And kind of the same for the database. We back it up, install your new version of SQL on your new server, restore it, and keep going. Yeah.
Yeah. So you mentioned SQL, and I realized we haven't mentioned it yet. You said you install your new version of SQL. So I wanted to quickly hit on the fact that Microsoft SQL, for those that have been using PDM for a really long time and remember this, SQL used to be part of the packaging with PDM Professional. That did change fairly recently. I don't remember if it was last year or the year before that. SQL is now a separate thing, which actually has some nice benefits, because if you actually like read through the old EULA, your SQL that you used for PDM could not be used for anything but PDM, because it was something that was the agreement with SOLIDWORKS to Microsoft. So if you do need to upgrade your SQL, if you want to get on SQL 2019 or 2017, you do have to make sure you can get your own licensing. Talk to your Microsoft reseller. It's easy enough to get a license of SQL. But that is something that you need to be able to think about and understand, like, well, if we're going to upgrade our PDM, if we need a new server, then we probably want to upgrade to a later version of Microsoft SQL Server. If you already have SQL because of an ERP system, for example, you can just utilize that, as long as it's not breaking your user agreement, of course. But that is something that I wanted to make sure we pointed out, because it's not so much of a surprise anymore, because people seem to just kind of understand it. But I did want to highlight that just in case anybody was thinking, well, I can just upgrade to the latest SQL that's shipped with PDM. If you want to use that, it's 2014 Service Path 3. So again, going back to that discussion earlier, you're going to be missing out on those nice benefits of actually being on a newer version of SQL.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you're in a position where you're not super familiar with the different versions of SQL and what's really required, you know, please reach out to us, because we can help you make sure that you're getting the right version, you know, enough licensing to make sure you're compliant, to make sure you're compliant with Microsoft's licensing agreement and all those good things. We spend a lot of time talking to our customers about it. And we also have some cheat sheets that we can share too to help. So don't think you have to, you know, stay on the Microsoft webpage for hours and hours trying to figure out what you need. Typically, we could kind of point you in the right direction. And even SOLIDWORKS Corporate themselves have even have some tools to help you identify what to recommend. So it can feel like, you know, rocket surgery at times. Really, there's just a handful of configurations that most of our customers need, and we can help make sure that you get what's required there.
But it doesn't have to be rocket surgery. That's why we're here. We're here to make it so that you don't have to do surgery on rockets, because nobody wants to do that. But prior to me kind of interrupting you, we were just kind of going through, you know, we reconnect our databases. So it really is, you install your SQL, you install your new components on your new server, and you do essentially a backup and restore. And then you just reconnect your clients. It's not a terribly hard process to do, but it's something that our customers have to do. They have to make sure that you're on a supported environment, you're on a supported system, and you're up to date, because every IT person I've ever talked to hates old hardware. They hate old software. Everything has to be brand new for IT, because that's what they need it to be. Which is fine. And I prefer the new stuff, because it's faster, it's better, ideally at least.
Yeah, you want to make sure you're taking advantage of the software you purchased, because, you know, you pay you have your recurring maintenance fees every year to get you that latest version. Why not use it? So it's always worth the little bit of investment to make sure that you're on the latest version all the time. Or as, you know, as often as you can be, and take advantage of those new features.
Now, definitely,
one thing I do want to say, it's like, you know, when we talk about this server move, yes, it is moving from A to B, but there are some other things that need to happen in the background. I don't want everyone out there to start moving stuff and thinking it's all going to work when it gets there. You know, behind the scenes, inside the software, there's things like server names and IP addresses. And so there's other things behind the scenes that also need to be updated when you do a move. Even if you're upgrading in place, there's a chance that you could be changing some things in your networking architecture that could affect PDM. So, you know, there's guides out there. You know, if you look in your install guide, it says exactly in there how to move server components. But if you want to get done quickly with the help of experts, you know, that's where we come in. Mm-hmm. We're not going to make you an expert on this episode, but just know that, you know, when you're doing a server move, it doesn't need to be scary, but there are definitely a checklist of things that need to happen in order to be successful.
It's generally easier than a migration. Kind of where we started this whole conversation, a server move is not as scary as migration. And that's, I think that's where we can kind of leave the server move, because at this point, as long as everyone still listened all the way through the server move, they're now wondering, okay, I need to move to a new server. What does that new server look like? Ryan, you said there's a formula for sizing your server. And I know you said you wrote like a novel years ago to a customer about what it looks like. But basically, there's a really good way of doing it. There's like, this is the exact way you're supposed to size your server. And then there's the quick and dirty DIY method that gets you pretty darn close. So how should we be sizing these servers, mostly from a drive perspective? Because then we can get into the RAM here in a bit. But for the drives in particular, how are we supposed to really be sizing these things?
Yeah. So at the beginning of our conversation here, we're talking about the different components of PDM. And so this really focuses on that archive server. So that archive server is where all the files live. So and another question comes up a lot about PDM is how it actually stores all those files. So some people don't know it, but whenever you make a version inside a PDM, it is a one-to-one copy of that file. So if you have a 1 gigabyte file that you've checked in and out 5 times, making changes to it each time, you're going to have 5 copies of that file in the archive. So when we're talking about drive size, it's a lot different than when you're talking about just a normal like folder you might have on your desktop or a network location. So it grows differently. So when we talk about sizing an archive server, there is this kind of math that we use. So when we're dealing with brand new customers, this is kind of the path we take them. So we look at the original data set. Let's say you have 10 gigabytes of files. So when we're sizing up a new server, we definitely need to have space for those 10 gigabytes. You know, that makes sense to everybody. But now that we add on the layer of PDM, we get almost an exponential growth of archive size because of how it holds on to all of its historic information. So again, it's a one-to-one copy of that file every time you make a change to it, which it has a lot of benefits as compared to like a differential, like some other systems do. I won't get into the weeds too much there, but the main takeaway here is that it will grow a lot. Now, on average, most people, most files that are inside the system, most companies that use it have 3 versions per file, right? So when we come in, if we have 10 gigabytes sitting on a network drive, we want to bring into PDM, you should expect that to be about 3 times its size, you know, in order to give some room for growth. So if it was 10 gigabytes, you want at least to account for 30 gigabytes that's going to take up when you move from a normal location to a PDM system. So right there, you're kind of got a formula of 3 times. Mm-hmm. But you're not sizing just for the near term, you need to size for the long term. So there's this idea of growth of your system. So as we kind of mentioned before, you want this to last maybe 3 to 5 years before you really need to worry about it again. So if you know what your growth curve is, you know, how many gigabytes you expand each month, you can use that to kind of figure out, okay, this is how much I need to work for 5 years. But 9 times out of 10, when I'm working with even an IT person, they may not know what that is because they've never needed to really pay attention to it. When drive space runs out, you just add more drives. Certainly, that's still true here with PDM. But again, most people want something reliable that they could look to in the future. Now, we could do this big fancy equation like we kind of mentioned earlier, but we have a very simple way to look at it. When we tell people that they're sizing for a new server, we say use just a simple 5x. So if you have 10 gigabytes today, you want to have a room for 50 in the future to give you some runway, to give you some breathing room. Now, of course, if you have a very large data set, that can add up very quickly. So most of our customers are typically starting with about 20 gigabytes of data in PDM. That's just on average across hundreds of different customers. So we tell them, you know, you need probably at least so much drive space to set that up. So does that make sense so far, Nick, kind of what I'm explaining there?
Yeah. So if we take 5 times our normal data, that should be enough for us to be confident, like this is going to be okay, not just for today or and tomorrow, but for next year, for maybe the year after that as well. But the archive is only half of that battle, because the archive server, that's going to be the big one in the drive space, because it is storing all of those files. So every single version, and there are things like cold storage where you can kind of move stuff onto other drives if you get a whole lot of versions. But when you're just starting out, 5x is a pretty decent number to look at for the archive server. For the database server, it's a very different story, because I know we have both seen databases that are enormous, but for the most part, those databases are not going to get not even close to as large as the archive. I don't even have a good number for this. Maybe you've got a good number for how big that really is going to be, but a normal computer, disk space wise, is going to be just fine hosting the database server.
Yeah, that's very true. So with the database itself, like if we look at the MBD file, it's going to be significantly smaller than what we're doing on the archive. So typically, most brand new vaults, PDM vaults, when you set up, the database is usually somewhere between 4 gig and 8 gig when it starts. That's just kind of a rough number. So not huge, but you know, a decent size. You need to account for it. And when we look at some of our more established customers who've had PDM for a long time, their database size can be upwards between 15 and 30 gigabytes, you know, just depending on how they use it, how much metadata they store, how often they version things. Like, there's a lot of variables that go into how big a database can be. Some of the largest databases we've seen have been in, you know, north of 100 gigabytes, but that's exceedingly rare. And when we are sizing a server, again, like 100 gigabytes is not a ton when we're talking about drive space. So having a place for that database to live is fairly straightforward. You don't need to, you know, carve out tons of drive space for it. Just need to give it some room to breathe, if you will. Now, when we talk about RAM, that's a completely different story when it comes to the database server itself.
It's kind of the opposite.
Exactly. So when we're looking at your server requirements for hosting that database, what you're really looking at is the RAM. You need to have enough RAM available to load the database completely. So if you have an 8 gig database, you need a minimum of 8 gig RAM to support it. That allows for, you know, just the fast searching time, allows the system to operate as it's intended. And of course, you need to give some additional overhead for whatever else is running on the system. Ideally, we don't want a whole lot of other software running alongside PDM. But again, looking at your resources, you could get a feel for what that needs to be.
And you can run those two. I will say you can run the archive and the database on the same machine. Can versus should is a very different question. If you're smaller, you don't have a bunch of engineers, you've got a pretty small archive, small database, you could probably pull it off. If you are looking at 15, 20 people that are always access this, you've got almost a terabyte of data. I just threw out a terabyte. That's an arbitrary number. If you have a lot of data, a lot of people pinging this server, you probably do want them to be separate, but you can put them together. That is an option that is available if you absolutely have to. Like, personally, my server that I always show for demos, it is on the same machine. I don't have three different servers elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, when we talk about, you know, what components should be installed, where should this be on the same server? There's a lot of different ways you can do it. You know, especially like folks who are heavy in the VMs, they like having separate machines for everything. Mm-hmm. Some people who are heavy in the VMs don't like to do that. So, you know, a lot of this will come down to preference from IT, because, you know, obviously they need to take into account things like disaster recovery and those kinds of things. So fewer machines might be better, but that's another conversation. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit more about typical use cases. Mm-hmm. So now most of our customers install everything on one machine. everything on one server. Your license server, your archive server, your database server, you know, web server, if you're dealing with that. You know, there's other components there. Typically, they keep all that on the same machine, just for simplicity. And that works well if you don't have a very large environment. So what does that mean? So when we're looking at sizing for, you typically do it based on the number of users that are going to be in the system. So when you have fewer than, let's say, 20 concurrent users, typically you'd be just fine with a single environment. There's not enough traffic there to really, for anyone to notice things are slowing down on a regular basis. But if you have more than that, like you have more than 20 concurrent users, you're probably going to want to look at splitting, having the archive on one dedicated machine and the database on another dedicated machine. And the reason for that really comes down to the I/O, or the ins and outs of all the information flowing back and forth in the system. Mm-hmm. So to peel that back just a little bit more, when we're looking at the archive, what the archive needs is not a whole lot. Like, it could probably run on just a single gigabyte of RAM. It doesn't need very much at all. The application is very low overhead. Its job is simply to serve up files to the users. And the main limiting factor there is going to be the right speed of the drive. You don't need super fast storage for the archive. You know, normal spinning platters will work fine. Probably still want directly attached storage out there for folks who know what that means. It will support appliances like NAS, but it's going to be a lot slower. So generally speaking, low RAM requirements, low CPU requirements. The best thing we can recommend is directly attached storage, size to the amount of room you might need for that archive. So that's kind of what we're looking at on the archive side. On the database side, which again is the brains of the operation, it likes really fast read and write speeds. So we want to make sure that wherever the database is being stored is on fast storage. The tempdb, which is a file that's part of the system, should also be on fast storage. So that way it can read and write as quickly as possible to the RAM back and forth to make sure that it's computing as fast as it can. And that's why we want to split them up, is because the resources it uses could conflict if they're on the same system.
Yeah, and the biggest thing, like you said, it's the RAM. The brains of the operation is going to be really, really intense as far as the CPU and the RAM. The more powerful the machine is in that sense is going to really benefit it. Now, there are limiting factors to that, and I know we're getting a little long in this one, but like PDM standard, your RAM requirements, oddly enough, are going to actually be a lot less because it uses SQL Express. There are limits there, like 1 gigabyte can be loaded in RAM at any point in time. So, you know, you can feed it as much RAM as you want, but it's only ever going to take one, and the database can only ever get up to 10 gigabytes. Versus PDM Pro, it uses SQL standard or enterprise if you want it, and give it whatever it can take. If you want to give it 32 gigabytes of RAM, and if it can use that, it will use that. Of course, you don't need to. You need to have like at least 16 to start off. But Ryan, like you said, match your database size is really what you should be trying to do as best you can. But they're very separate applications. What the archive does, it's not CPU intensive. It's not RAM intensive. It is drive space intensive because every version is a file. And that's your physical solvers file. That's not the metadata behind it. The database server, it's going to be really RAM, really CPU intensive, but the size of it, outside of those rare cases, it's probably not going to really exceed 100 gigabytes at any point. So a normal computer could run that side of it, not the RAM, not the CPU. It should be a pretty fast machine as far as processing power goes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so like people who have a bad day are folks who are on a single server, have lots of users, and inside that server, there's one spinning disk that both the database and archive are on. Those are people who have issues with performance because the database is fighting with the archive for write access to that drive volume. And so we want to split those up. When you have a physical server, it's pretty straightforward. It's separate physical drives. If you're in VM, it gets a little, you have to be a little more careful because chances are you're using a shared pool of drive space for all your VMs. So if possible, it would be great if you could dedicate like a faster SSD to your database and let your archive use whatever normal storage you have, bulk storage you have for your VM host. So there are some things there you could do to get some better performance. Obviously, if you don't do that, it's not like the system's not going to work. But if you're looking to get more efficiency out of your new hardware, you know, these are some things you could look at doing.
And the final thing that I really wanted to hit on here is that performance-wise, it does also depend where are you relative to your server. You're in Chicago-ish land. I'm in Columbus-ish land. If we're working on the same server, whichever one of us is hosting is going to have way better performance than the other person because we have to pull this data from one city to the other, depending on exactly what we're doing. So what people will often try to do is, depending on how far away you are, you might want to take advantage of replication. And I don't want to get too far into replication. I just want to mention that it is an option. You can replicate your archive. You can replicate your database. And that can dramatically speed up your performance because the files you need are going to be much closer to you. So Ryan, you were telling me yesterday as we were kind of preparing for this that really with the archive server, we only need to size for what we need. Like your archive server and your replicated archive server do not need to be the same because that replicated archive, maybe it's a spinoff of your business. Maybe you've got different divisions and you've got one division that has a terabyte of data and that's really the main company. But then you've got this other division that's got maybe a 20th of that. Maybe they've got 50 gigabytes. Well, their replicated archive does not need to be a terabyte. It really needs to just be able to house what they need. They don't need to have access to everything. We only replicate down the stuff that is important to them at any point in time.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is something that gets lost when we're talking about like getting a new system set up, especially for folks who are using like archive replication. So archive replication is very common for our customers that have multiple sites. And, you know, at first glance, most folks would say, well, I have this archive in Chicago. I probably need exactly the same system in Columbus. And like you just said, that not necessarily the case, because there's not really an advantage to having a one-to-one replication. Because some folks say, well, for disaster recovery. But the truth of it is that replication is not meant in this sense is not meant to be disaster recovery. Mm-hmm. You can't take your archive in Columbus, FedEx it to Chicago and expect everything to just work. There's more to it. So there for people who are thinking, well, I'll do that one to one for disaster recovery. There's better options. So what you really want to do is only replicate what's needed. So this can be difficult depending on how you structure your PDM system. But like, let's say inside my PDM system, I have a Chicago folder. I have a Columbus folder. I could tell that the system only replicate the Columbus folder to Columbus and don't replicate the Chicago folder to Columbus. That could help us cut down on the resources required at those remote sites. Now, of course, if you need something from the Chicago folder, that can replicate what's called on demand, like when you need it. But in order to push a bunch of files out to Columbus, we only want to push what we think is going to be used. So when you, if you're sizing up replicated sites, typically they're a fraction of what you need. And typically they're only the archive. So you don't need to worry about RAM. You don't necessarily need to worry about having a ton of compute power. It's, again, going to be all about drive size and physical location. You know, the physics comes into play. The closer you are to the data, the faster you're going to be able to get to it.
So yeah, as far as performance goes, check out replication. Like if you've got people all over the country, maybe that's something to explore. Now, if you're saying, hey, we're 20 miles away and we're having some issues, maybe your internet could be a little bit better. 20 miles is kind of a short replication distance, but you never know. Sometimes you need it. Yeah,
I know you didn't want to talk too much about replication, but I'm going to say one other thing. A lot of people think setting up replication incurs additional cost from a SOLIDWORKS perspective. It does not. You can set up as many different replicated sites as you want. There's no additional licensing requirements, either from Microsoft or from SolidWorks. So if you're hesitant to set up a replicated site for some of the reasons we mentioned, maybe revisit that because it's super easy to set up and it can be a real benefit to your end users. It just the only real complication it brings up is when it comes to upgrade time, it's just a little extra work needs to be done to make sure those additional sites get upgraded as well.
We just have to make sure that everybody has the access that they need. We have to make sure that they can get into the archive because, yeah, if you're on a replicated archive, it's going as PDP performance relative to if you had to pull it 600 miles, if you're pulling it 60 or 6 or 5 or 4, it's going to be much better. And I decided to change it because I had a lot of sixes there and I don't really like that. So, but we've got our different databases, we've got our different servers, and they're going to be hosting things in different ways. And I think Ryan is just trying to wrap everything up here. We've kind of talked about the fact that we've got these different databases. We've got the literal database server. We have the archive server, which isn't really a database. It's an archive. They can be virtual if you want it to be. They don't have to be. They can be physical servers. If you want to be physical, great. Virtual, great. Just try to be on a supported environment. If we have to move it to a new server, we can move it. It's not a migration. It's not as scary as a migration. As far as sizing it goes, lots of different ways you can do it. But understanding your growth rate is going to be a pretty good step in the right direction if you can. If you can't, 5x. You should be generally okay. But of course, if you ever have any questions about that, as I say most of the time on the podcast, reach out to Inflow, reach out to your local reseller if you are not in one of our territories. But just talk to us. That's what we're here for, to help you guys understand this. But upgrading and getting onto a new server, thinking about the hardware requirements, it's not scary. We just have to make sure we think about the different avenues and the different things that could happen as we go forward. So Ryan, that's all I've got for this week. Thank you so much for joining me. This was a good conversation. I think we got really, really techie at points, but you know, people want that sometimes. They need to understand what they're looking for in a database server, in an archive server. There's a lot to think about, and I think we kind of covered everything that I was looking for to cover.
Yeah, I apologize. The inner professor came out a little bit there. So, but of course, if you want to have a deep technical conversation, you know, just let me know. I'm happy to do it.
Hey, I warned them up front. I said the professor's joining me, so they should have been in for this. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for joining me this week. I hope you enjoyed the conversation about hardware. So that's all I've got for this week, and I will talk to you guys next week. See ya.